It is a tragic story, as we have mentioned in chapters 17 through 21, are the very last five chapters of the book of Judges. And as I've mentioned before, I've enjoyed Nehemiah. I think that that was one of the wonderful things in my life. But I have to say that Judges is probably the book that I'm looking forward to getting out of because it deals with so much sin and talks about people that are just unwilling to heed the warnings of God. And there's a great warning about doing our own will. And so the theme is every man does that which is right in his own eyes. And it's interesting how evil begins to grow. And so in chapter 19, you're going to see that. You will see in chapter 17 and 18, as you pick up the tapes, it has to deal with the root of sin. And that will always be idolatry. And so we find the Levite looking for a job, being hired by Micah, and they're now becoming the priest, and a priest of idolatry, and that priest eventually went over to the Danites, and then eventually took him into full-on idolatry, and Jeroboam took the whole nation, the 10 kingdoms, into idolatry, and God destroyed them. But then in chapters 19 through 21, we have the fruit of evil. And so in 17 and 18, you see the root of evil, and that's idolatry, and then the fruit of that work of idolatry will always be immorality. And so in chapters 19 through 21, it speaks of immorality in the nation of Benjamin, and how Benjamin made so many mistakes, and they were humbled. And you remember when Saul said, "I am a Benjamite of the least of all the tribes." Well, the reason why is because the other 11 tribes about annihilated Benjamin. There were only about 600 men left when they got done with them because of chapters 19, 20, and 21. We'll see that. And it became the first civil war. If you enjoyed the civil war in history, this is really the first civil war of the Bible. We'll pick that up next week. But tonight, let me draw your attention. We'll go back into the whole chapter. But in verses 24 through 30, it gives you really the depravity of the human heart. Rape and revenge and reaping. "Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Then I will bring out now and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. But unto this man do not so vile a thing." But the men would not hearken to him, the men of Gibeon. So the man took his concubine, that would be the Levite, and I'll explain, brought her forth unto them, and they knew her. And in the Hebrew, that's sexual intercourse. They raped her, gang raped her, the whole city of men, and abused her all night until the morning. And when the day began to spring forth, they let her go. Then came the woman in the early morning, fell down at the door of the man's house, where her lord was till it was light. So she lay there bleeding and dying. And her lord arose, her husband, in the morning, and opened the door of the house, and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And I'll check this out. And he said unto her, "Up, and let us go." In other words, he gave her to be raped. And then he walks out, had a good night's sleep, walks out, "Get up, it's time to take off." What a great guy. "But now answered them, the man took her up, and she died, upon his donkey, and arose up, and got him to his own place. And when he was come into his house, he took a knife, laid it upon his concubine, and divided her, cut her up, in 12 pieces. Sent her into all the coast of Israel. And it was so that all that saw it, there was no such deed done nor seen from the days of the children of Israel came out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider of it. Take advice. Speak your mind." Powerful, powerful words. And I imagine if you would go into prison and sit there and talk to certain people. We were watching a special the other night about a kid, a bunch of kids just driving down the street wanting to pick somebody off and shoot him. And here, the guy that was driving knew what they were going to do and didn't really want to get involved, but he bended to a little bit of pressure. Well, now he sits in jail for 25 years, and the others, I believe, got life. But a little bit of evil just destroyed his life. But here is the ultimate thing, where you can give your wife over to be raped. You can walk out, say you're bleeding, and not even bat an eye. You can tell her to get up and not even help her. And then when she's dead, you can cut her up, send her out. And what the horrible thing is that in those days, there wasn't quick delivery, so no doubt the package stunk when they finally got there. And it was terrible. And so we want to take a few moments and talk about this. It's a credible story. And reading these three chapters that you're going to be looking at in the next couple of weeks is like kind of reading the LA Times or watching Jerry Springer, and just the amazing abuse of sexual things and the perversion that goes on. The U.S. Today, in the August 2nd, 1993 edition, did an article on TV violence. 5 violent acts per primetime TV an hour. But on Sunday morning, when the children watch cartoons, violent acts per hour multiply by 5 times. So every hour, 25 violent crimes begin to take place. And refusing to deal with evil will bring you to this place in your life. If you allow a little bit of evil, it becomes leaven. And it always starts with a lie. Just a little tiny lie. And Satan will take that lie, begin to build upon it, and begin to build his kingdom upon it. And the moment you open the door, it's like you just crack the door open a little bit. And he sticks his foot in, begins to make a beach place, and then he begins to do damage like you can't even believe. And it's interesting when I look at this whole thing in chapter 19, it talks about the beginning of evil. And then in chapter 20, it talks about what happens in the midst of evil, the civil war. And then in chapter 21, it talks about the end result of evil, that a whole tribe is wiped out. And I find it interesting, it all started back in chapter 17, where a woman lied. You remember Micah's mother lied? And she said, "Who took my money? I wanted to give it unto the Lord, everything." And when her son Micah confessed, then he gave it back to her. And she only gave a part. And then she said, "To the Lord." But it really wasn't to the Lord. It was to a statue and to shrines and everything else. And finally, she lied. And then we find that Micah picks it up and he becomes greedy. And he begins to build a shrine. And he desires to have this place where people can come and worship his house. And it becomes a wonderful thing. And then it comes to a Levite. You remember, he's looking for a job, but he's looking in the wrong place. And he now meets Micah, and we mentioned how when we are out of God's will, it almost seems like Satan begins to open the door. Almost like you can be really ugly and girls will begin to like you. And you can like, "Wow, God, you're really providing. Well, where are you at? In a topless bar?" You know, that's God's not leading you or guiding you, but in your mind, you have come to a point that you have justified and you accept certain things, and so you have to turn. And so this Levite is out of the place he should be. He now is hired by this man named Micah. He's now anointed by this man Micah. And secondly, we find that he's a Levite. He would never be a high priest, and so he assumes a responsibility. And then the tribe of Dan comes over. We took a look at that. And you remember they took everything that Micah had. And they took the priest and brought him back to the tribe of Dan. And he became a tribe or a priest to that tribe. And then all of a sudden we find Jeroboam makes it a national idol. There were 10 tribes are now worshiping in Dan and in Bethel. But it all started with a woman lying. And all of a sudden, you find this guy driving the car, and he lied to himself. And now he's doing the time. Or we look upon each other and we look upon our wives and we realize we've done certain things or we've done things, but it all starts with a lie. And the Bible says that we're to tell the truth. And I think it's important as we begin to look at this that once again, evil will always take root. And there was always a consequence for it. So we want to look at four things. I got to try to make it as fun as I can tonight. It is the worst chapter of the Bible. And so let's get this thing done and get it over with. But in verses 1 through 15, a woman's hostility, and there's nothing like a woman's hostility, let me tell you. If your wife or your woman is mad at you, it's going to be a terrible day. And we have a saying in my house, if mama's happy, everybody's happy. So my whole life is to make her happy. So I want peace in my life. And so if she's not happy, man, I'm just not happy. And so a hostility of a woman in verses 1 through 15. And secondly, we're going to take a look at a man's hospitality. A man's hospitality in verses 16 through 21. A man's hospitality in verses 16 through 21. And thirdly, we want to take a look at a city's whore. A city's whore in verses 22 through 26. A city that is absolutely outraged in verses 22 through 26. And then lastly, a nation humbled in verses 27 through 30. A nation humbled in verses 27 through 30. So let's pick up the story here, a woman's hostility in verses 1 through 15, and let's take a look at some of the things that he begins to lay out. It says that it came to pass in those days when there was no king, that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem of Judah. Now the first thing we find is once again there was no king in Israel. We saw that in chapter 17, I believe around verse 6. We see it again here in chapter 9, verse 1. And we'll find it one more time in chapter 21, verse 24. So it's interesting that in these last five chapters, it starts off with no king in chapter 17, verse 6. It has no king in chapter 19, verse 1. And it ends with no king in chapter 21, verse 24. And why am I saying that? Because when the Lord is not the Lord of your life, when there is not some authority over your life, some standard that you have to live up to according to the Word of God, then we will make bad choices. In other words, the human heart cannot be trusted. God desires that He would lead His people. And you really only have two ways to go, either humanism or creation. And creation is that you believe that God has given you this Bible to live your life. These are the rules of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So as you are part of the kingdom of God and studying the Word of God, He's going to lead you and guide you and build your life upon His principle. But if you believe in humanism, you do not believe in a creator. Therefore, you do not believe in a Bible. Therefore, you have no rules whatsoever, and you can do whatever you want. And when there is chaos and moral chaos, it is because we're not yielding to the creator of our life. And so we find in verse 1, there was a certain Levite. Now, this is not the same Levite, and this is interesting. In chapter 17 and 18, there was a Levite. His name was Jonathan. He was the grandson of Moses. And we mentioned that, and we don't want to spend a lot of time. This is another Levite. Now that tells me everything I need to know. And to the staff and to the pastors here, it is the greatest warning I think we can ever hear. That when the priest and the pastors and the staff are not upright before God, everything's going to fall apart. So when you find that in the religion or within Christianity, those whom God has placed in authority are not staying true to the convictions of God, every man is going to fall apart. And so when Jesus came, He didn't go to the people. He went straightway to the temple. And going to the temple, seeing the confusion, turning over the tables, he knew exactly where the nation was. So God will always go to your heart. God does not want to look upon what I'm doing or what I'm building or what I have or what I desire. God gets to the heart. Because out of the heart comes the issues of life. And God, when he comes to a church, he looks at the leadership. And if the leadership is bad, the people are going to have no direction in their life. And when we look today, we realize the greatest curse in the church is probably 75% of pastors do not even believe in the virgin birth. And so people are standing in the pulpit, not teaching the word of God. So the people are going astray. And the greatest thing that we need is we need those who are in leadership or in a position to honor that position above everything else in their life. And so we find another Levite. The Levite in 17 and 18, he was unhappy. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. It's a very simple thing. He didn't want to cause any problems, but he, by himself, with Satan, brought an idolatry that took out 10 tribes. He didn't know that, but that's what evil does. It's looking to get inside. It's looking to twist, to destroy, to tear down. This Levite is not even concerned about anything. He has lost heart. It's like a man who's a pastor that has no more heart, or a woman that's in ministry that has no more heart. He doesn't care about the law of God, so he marries a concubine. He doesn't care about the concubine, so he throws her out to a whole city to be raped. And then he goes to sleep and wakes up and tells her, get up. Doesn't even help her. And so we find that when all of a sudden the compassion and the leadership is gone, things begin to fall apart. And so here, no king and a certain Levite. And once again, he was to be separated unto God. He was to be that shining example of the glory of God. But he was not a moral example. He had no business being married outside of his own tribe. And now he went further than that. He married a concubine. And he's living away from fellowship. He's not in fellowship. And let me tell you what happens when I get out of the word or get out of fellowship. Number one, I begin to make up my own rules. I need to, because I need to live with myself and my guilt. So I begin to convince myself I can get away with it. I'm not going to be dealt with. And I begin to go against God's will. And I begin to become convicted. And I deal with that conviction. And then all of a sudden, my heart becomes calloused. And I have a hardened, calloused heart. And then I begin to destroy the very things I love. And he was living for himself. If you notice in verse 4, and just look at these verses. So they did eat and drink, and they lodged there. Verse 4, interesting. He loved to drink. And then in verse 6, and they sat down and did eat and drink, and both of them together, let thy heart be merry. Boy, he enjoyed having a good party. And then notice in verse 8, comfort thy heart, and they did eat. I mean, he loved to eat. I'm not going to say this is to vibe, but he loved to eat. And then in chapter 19, verse 22, now as they were making their heart merry, do you see anything about God in that? No. You see, when you begin to go away from God, and you begin to go against God, and you begin to make your own decisions, you now need to fill the emptiness with wine or women or drugs or abuse because you're seeking to fill the emptiness in your own heart. And then we see the concubine. What a tragic thing. And then it says in verse 2 that he went back. After 4 months, she left him. And it says, and his concubine played the whore against him. Now, that's a bad translation, I believe. It really means that she was angry with him. Something happened. Hostility broke out. If she did commit adultery, then he could stone her, but he didn't. So most of the Latin and also the Revised Version has to deal with anger. In other words, she was angered at him, so she went back to Mama's house. There was a time when we first got married that Gail got really mad at me and was looking for her keys, and so I found them and hid them. Because I knew she was going to go home to her mother. And we were out in Victorville, and I would not give the keys, and we laugh about it now, but it was really a great gift of wisdom God gave me to grab those keys. She was upset. But what happens is because oftentimes the insecurity begins to arise. And so we see that there was a separation. It's always hostility. And then in verses 3 and 4, there was a little bit of reconciliation. Her husband arose, took him 4 months to do it, went after her to speak friendly unto her. In other words, I'm going to make up. And to bring her again, having a servant with him and a couple of donkeys. In other words, usually the women would have to walk and the men would ride. He was going to kind of bless her and say, come on back and I'll let you ride in my donkey. And so that was a big thing back then. And she brought him into her father's house. And when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. In other words, he didn't know Dad. So no doubt the Levite is out of God's will, looking for a prostitute, concubine, grabs her, marries her. She gets mad, she takes off, and now he's coming to once again smooth things out. In verse 4, and the father-in-law, the damsel, the father retained him. In other words, I like you, stick around, hang out, let's watch the football game. And he abode with him there 3 days, so they did eat and drink and lodge there. I mean, there's nothing like in-laws, it's a fun thing, but I'll tell you, it gets old real, real quick. And then in verse 5, we find, and it came to pass on the fourth day, that when they arose in the morning, that they arose up to depart. And the damsel's father said unto the son-in-law, comfort thy heart, eat a little bit more food, have a little bit more cheese, a burrito, and afterwards go your way. In other words, fill up and go. And they sat down and did eat and drink, both of them together. For the damsel's father said unto the man, be content. You know, you're full, it's getting dark, the traffic's terrible back then. I pray thee, tarry all night, let thy heart be merry. In other words, let's get drunk one more night. And when the man arose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him, therefore, hey, stay here. I like it. I like my daughter. Don't leave. I'll tell you, you get caught, it's hard to get out. I see guys sometimes. It's so funny. Honey, come, let's go. Honey. And it's just fun to watch guys trying to tell their wives to get going. And they don't. They just kind of meander and talk and, you know, it's just everything you can do to get your wife out, because the longer you stay, they're going to invite you to dinner and you don't want to have dinner there. You want to go. And now you're caught. Now it's about nighttime. Now it's 7 o'clock traffic. Now you got to stay. Now you're going to watch a movie. Hey, you don't want to go out tonight. You might get killed on the way home. Spend the night. Okay, I'll spend the night. Every moment you're thinking, how am I going to get away? Well, you're in trouble with the wife, so you really can't push it. You just met the guy, so you really can't tell him where to do. And so you kind of have to play it. And so he does this. So 4 days he's there, the fifth day in verse 8. And he rose early in the morning, the fifth day, I'm going to do it. Depart with the damsel's father, comfort thy heart, I pray thee. And they tarried until the afternoon, and they did eat of them. I mean, it's like a ship. All you do is eat and eat. You can't wait to get off the ship. You're sick of eating. And then in verse 9, and when the man arose and departed, he and his concubine and his servants, his father-in-law, and the damsel's father said unto him, behold, now the day draws towards the evening. I pray you tarry all night. Behold, the day goeth to the end. Lodge here, that thy heart may be merry. And tomorrow, get you up early on your way, that you may go to your home. So you know who's controlling this family, the father and the wife. And so we find in verse 10 through 15, but the man would not tarry that night. He finally put his foot down. He arose, up, departed, came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem, and there were with him 2 donkeys saddled, his concubine also with him. Now this Jebus is kind of interesting. It means that Jebus, it was taken over by the Canaanites, and the land, when Joshua gave it, they came in, they drove out the enemy. Finally, you remember, a portion was given to Benjamite. And the Benjamites were to drive out the enemy, and part of that land was Jerusalem. But they did not drive out the enemy. It wasn't until King David later on came and took Jerusalem and took it away from the Gentiles and brought it back into the kingdom of Israel. And so that was in 2 Samuel chapter 5. And once again, Jebus is a city that was given over. It was a Canaanite city. And so, you know, the servant said, let's stay here tonight. And notice in verse 11, he wouldn't listen. And when they were by Jabus, the day was far spent. In other words, they got a late start. They've been riding for about 6 to 8 miles. The servant said unto his master, come, I pray thee, let us turn into the city of the Jabus and lodge in it. And his master said unto him, we will not tarry hither into the city of strangers. In other words, I will not live among the Canaanites. That is not the children of Israel. We will pass over to Gibeah. And he said unto his servants, come, let us draw near to one of these places to lodge all night in Gibeah. And they passed on and went their way, and the sun went down upon them, and they were in Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. They finally kept going. It got late. They arrived in the city that was a Benjamite city, and they turned hither to go and to lodge in Gibeah. And when he went in, he sat down in the street of the city, and there was no one that would take him in. Now, this is interesting. The most powerful thing in the Eastern culture is hospitality. When I was in some of the areas in Israel and other places I've traveled, Japan, and man, they just give you hospitality. I remember teaching the 9th Infantry Army, or the 12th Division Army, I think it is in Japan. And the guy said, the admiral, before you teach, you need to have a cup of coffee. And I'm thinking, okay, I like coffee. And coffee was $4 a cup over there way back when I went. That's a lot of money. And so I'm thinking, I'll have a cup of coffee and start teaching. Well, he brought out a little jigger. I'll never forget this. And he put a whole teaspoon of Taster Choice, and then he filled it up with hot water. I mean, it was slimy black caffeine. It was like almost, it's like a fix, you know. And so, you know, I took it, and man, I couldn't even talk. I was preaching. I was talking so fast, you know. But I was like wired. And then another time I remember that Chuck went over, and they wanted to give him something really special, and so they gave him monkey brains to eat. And he did. I mean, I just, yeah, you know. And so it's like hospitality. And if you say no, you offend them. And so you learn how to eat. You kind of move the food around and you know, and you get rid of it. And so we had chocolate ants and all kinds of things, and, you know, kind of interesting things. But hospitality, you don't say no. It's like the Samoan culture. You come into the house, eat, 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 grease, grease, grease. Suck this grease out of this chicken. Suck this grease out of this tangerine. We dip it and we fry it and we soak it, and hey, our cholesterol is 9,000. No biggie. Suck this thing dry. You go to African culture, I love it. Hey, we're going to fry bananas. We're going to have ginger. Whoa, man. And then you go to our culture. We're going to have a piece of ham. I mean, it's just like our culture is nothing. It's the other cultures. Really fun when you go around. But anyway, get in the way. But there was no one in the streets. No one brought him in. Something was wrong with this city. Something was wrong. And Benjamin was over. He was in charge. But he was not in charge of this city. It's interesting. And so they were not taken in. They were not brought in. And so we see a man's hospitality in verses 16 through 21. A woman's hostility in verses 1 through 15. And now in verses 16 through 21, we find a man's hospitality. Notice he says in verse 16 and 17, he lifted up his eyes. I like that. In other words, he was looking. And here's the story. And behold, there came an old man from his work out in the field at evening. In other words, he was out working in the field, which was also in Mount Ephraim. He sojourned in Gibeah, but the men of the place were Benjamites. And when he had lifted up his eyes, and what he's saying is he was from Ephraim. He's now living here, but this is the city of Benjamin, but he's living there. And when he lifted up his eyes, he saw a man in the street of the city. The old man said, where goest thou, and where have you come? In other words, he lifts up his eyes. He sees this man. He sees this concubine. He sees this servant. And then he says in verse 18, he said unto them, we are passing from Bethlehem, Judah, towards the site of Mount Ephraim. From thence I went to Bethlehem of Judah, but I am now going to the house of the Lord, and there is no man that receives me to his house. You know, he's not going to the house of the Lord. He's going to a city, and he's going to a place, but not the house of the Lord. Yet there is both straw and provider. He says in verse 19, I have animal, I have straw, I won't be a burden in your life. Take me in. Verse 20, the old man said, peace be with you. Howsoever, let all the wants lie upon me, only lodge not in the street. And he brought him into the house, and gave and provided unto the donkeys, and he washed their feet, and did eat and drink. So the hospitality, this man comes in, he's an old man, he's looking, he sees the need, he lifts up his eyes, he wants to help, brings them in, he feeds the animals, he feeds them. I think the great story is he lifted up his eyes. Sometimes we get so down, so depressed, so overwhelmed that we are not very gracious. We need to lift our eyes and see beyond ourselves and reach out that hand once again. And then something unique begins to take place. He brings him into the house. And then in verses 22 through 26, a city poor, the sons of Beel. Now as they were making their heart merry, they're drinking again. I mean, this guy could drink. Drinking with his father-in-law, drinking here. Behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about. They surrounded the house. They beat at the door. They spoke to the master of the house of the old man, saying, where does that sound like? Sounds like Genesis chapter 19. Lot's inside the city, the two angels. The men surround it, the homosexuals. They begin to knock on the door. They want to have homosexual relationships with the angels of God. And because of that, God smote Sodom and Gomorrah. Here in Judges chapter 19, and I like that, Genesis 19, Judges 19. I like the way God puts things together, and you'll see that more and more as you study the Word. And here he says that we may know him. In other words, the word know means that an intimate relationship. We want to have sex with the man of the house. And in verse 22, the Old Testament for the word Belial is a word that means worthless, or it means wickedness, or lawlessness, or recklessness. Or it means homosexuality in Romans chapter 1, or it means drunkenness in chapter 1 of 1 Samuel. In other words, it is a perversion that is out of control. The sons of Belial, in other words, they are bent on evil, they want to destroy. Now, in the New Testament, it has a little bit different meaning. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, but ye are not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what concord has Christ with Belial? In other words, there it is, Christ and the devil. So it's personified in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, they were worthless and wicked. In the New Testament, it personifies everything that's bad. It speaks of the devil. And so we find here that we may know them, sexual intercourse. And in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with a womankind is an abomination. I mean, I know the homosexuals are against the church. They don't like the church. They don't want to hear it. And I think we are to love everybody, but we're not to tolerate the sins that are unpleasing to God. And what he's saying is that in these last days, this thing, this homosexual thing, is going to explode. And they're going to lobby, and they're going to get more power, and possibly they're going to force my hands to hire them, and I won't. I'll go to jail before I do it. Because that's what Peter said. We must obey God rather than man. There might come a time in our life that we'll have to make a decision. Now, it's not a hate crime. It is a situation that God condemns it. And that's why he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And the reason why it perverses the nature. Romans in chapter 1, I think is 24. Wherefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness, through the lust of their own heart, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worship and serve the creature more than the Creator, who has blessed them forevermore. For this cause God gave them up, and to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into witches against natural. In other words, women with women, men with women. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of a woman, burned in their own lust one towards another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, receiving in themselves the recompense of their error which was meant. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over. So God gave them up, then God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. In other words, they didn't listen. They wouldn't hearken. They blame everything else. And God is saying that God's going to deal with it. So they surrounded in Genesis 19. The men were smitten, and once again the city was annihilated. And I think that one of the keys before God destroys a nation is homosexuality, abortion, killing the young, and we are right at the border. In other words, unless our government turns around and begins to recognize life and the value of life, not perversion, but here's the problem. You have everything on television. You have gay things and gay this and queer this and everything and marriage and adultery. And when you finally get something halfway decent, they take it off the air. In other words, they want to fill your mind and your heart with everything contrary to God. And so in verse 23 and 26, it talks about the host protecting, and you would always protect your host. And the men, the master of the house, went out, the old man, and said, "Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly." In other words, this is a wicked deed. "Seeing that this man is coming to my house, do not this folly." That's pretty bold. Don't do it. "Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Then I will bring out now. Humble ye them." In other words, do what you want to them. It's terrible. Just horrible. It just breaks my heart. I mean, this really breaks my heart when you look at this in a powerful way. "Humble them and do with them what you seem good unto you. But unto this man, do not so vile things." So notice in verse 24, "Do not this vile thing." And then notice in verse 23, "So wickedly." And then again in verse 23, "This folly." And here, "Take my daughter, rape her, humble her, use her, take her and just destroy her life, but don't touch this guy." And then in verse 25 and 26, they didn't buy it. "But the man would not hearken to him." He was an old man. "The man took his concubine, the Levite, brought her forth unto them, and they knew her and abused her all night. And so they had sexual intercourse with her, and they abused her all night." These are the men of the city, probably hundreds and hundreds of guys, until the morning. "And when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawn of the day, fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was till it was light." In other words, they gang raped her, and they abused her, and they killed her. What a tragic thing. What a tragic thing that he had no heart to stand. I mean, just to not stand. And that's what happens when evil gets in. I just hope you understand. You say, "Well, I would stand." No, you wouldn't. I've talked to pastors who have fallen into sin. And they were teaching months before of the power of God, and now they can't talk about that power because they allowed a little bit of evil and it destroyed their life. And you think you're going to stand, but you can't. And you want to stand, but you won't. And the reason why, because you're scared to death. And the reason you're scared is because you're not trusting God, you're trusting yourself. And that is the great danger of not trusting God. You see, when I get God out of my life, I live in fear. I don't know what is going to happen, and I don't know what's going to happen to my family, and everything has to be predicted. But when I trust God, I don't have to worry about a thing. Because I know that He's watching over my wife, and He's watching over me, and we don't need to fear. But one of the great signs of being out of fellowship is fear. But God hasn't given you the spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of a sound mind. And so all of a sudden, they destroyed this woman's life. And what is so tragic, in verses 27 through 30, a nation humbled. And so in verses 1 through 16, we mentioned a woman's hostility. And then in verses 16 through 21, a man's hospitality. And then in verses 22 through 26, a city's horror. In other words, the Benjamites would not even do anything about this to the men there that were living there. And lastly, a nation's humility in verses 27 through 30. And her lord, her husband, rose up in the morning, opened the door of the house, and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. In other words, she made it all the way to the door. She was crawling back to her husband, crawling back to the safety of his life. He didn't love her. He didn't care about her. She was just something to use and abuse. And he said unto her, up and let us go. I mean, I think that's the coldest verse in the whole Bible. Get up, let's go. Definitely, no doubt, in a puddle of blood. No doubt, thrashed and clothes torn and probably naked and beaten and bruised. And he doesn't even bow. He doesn't even bend. Doesn't even turn her over. Doesn't even cry. Doesn't do nothing. He just looks at her and says, get up, let's go. She's just nothing. No compassion. And that's what happens when you get away from God. You lose heart. Bitterness becomes so easy. Hardness becomes so powerful. You can turn against your friends, and you can live in anger, and you can live in resentment, and you can be so mad at the world. And you look at people and you just get mad at them, and you have a grudge, and you feel the people owe you. Well, let me tell you what happened. Somewhere along the line, you took your eyes off of God. Because you remember why you became a Christian? That God would use you to save a world. And that through your life, you would be a light. And you would reach out to those that were in need. But now you hate humanity because you hate life. Why? Because somewhere in this whole mess, you let a little bit of evil and you've lost the consciousness of God. And when that happens, your heart goes. And I want to encourage you tonight. Listen to your heart and listen to your words and think what goes on in your brain, because God gave you a brain. And when you start thinking or talking different or cussing or doing things, God's trying to tell you something. And he says in verse 28, and she made it up, let's go. But none answered. Then the man took her up upon his donkey, and the man arose up and got him into his place. No emotion. And when he was come into his house, he took a knife, laid hold upon his concubine, divided her. The word in the Hebrew is to cut her up as a sacrifice. And then divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces. Torso, one tribe, arm, one tribe, another tribe, a leg, one tribe, head, one tribe. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came out of Israel. Consider it, take advice, speak your mind. Can you imagine if you got a package and you opened it up and it was a torso of a person? That'd be a terrible thing. Or can you imagine if you opened a present, it'd be a head of a woman. Her eyes just staring at you. And what happened is all of Israel went crazy. This could not have happened. And so what really took place in chapters 20 and 21 is they came after Benjamin. Well, Benjamin didn't do it. Yeah, probably not. But it was the city of Benjamin. And Benjamin let it happen under their watch. And you're not responsible for your children, but you are responsible for what goes on in your home. And it's important that we can't tell people who come into the church, but we are responsible for those who are in leadership here. And God dealt with Benjamin because they didn't stop this corruption. And when you turn your head and you turn your eye and you don't want to get involved, God will hold you responsible. because truth is truth, and truth stands. And when I'm not willing to stand, it's because I'm afraid. And when I'm not willing to speak, it's because I'm afraid. And I saw something today that kind of blessed my heart. I don't know a lot about Larry. He's a great guy. I like him. Italian, loves to eat. But he stood there in front of all those people who have power in his city. And he says, you know, it's God who has blessed this city. And it's God that we need to look to. And it's Jesus Christ who's changed my life. That man stood. He does more than we do. We're afraid of our neighbors. We're afraid of our wives. We're afraid of our kids. We're afraid of everything. But could it be that maybe we've just let a little bit too much evil into our life? He was a Levite, but he went and found a job that paid more. He was a Levite, but he went and hired a concubine. What's it tell me? Don't make the standard so high. Keep the standard in the heavens. Keep the standard according to the Word of God. We got to live like Christ. We got to act like Christ. We got to die like Christ. And for God's sake, you need to love your family. This man couldn't even stand for his concubines. A woman he shouldn't take, but a woman he did take, and a woman that was deserving his care, couldn't have his inheritance, but he didn't care. Get up. It's time to go. That poor man. So far from God, and so empty, so countless.